What is up, awesome dad family? Welcome back to the show. Today we've got in the lab Mr. Patrick Cummings. He's the founder of PNP Strategies, new author of The Family Business Balancing Act, an entrepreneur's guide to being a family man. You can get it on Amazon right now. There's a link below. You definitely want to check it out because, as we all know, fatherhood's important. But today we're going to talk about that balancing act, that balancing act. So Patrick, welcome to the show, brother. It's good to see you.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to it.
As am I. Love listening to you. And so I just want to kind of go back in time. I always like to kind of lay up the story a little bit here.
Sure.
What came first, fatherhood or entrepreneurship? Which one came first for you?
Fatherhood. And fatherhood drove me to entrepreneurship, actually.
Similar to myself. So I want to hear from you, Patrick. How did become a father push you into being an entrepreneur?
Well, when I was working in corporate America, I felt like I was a corporate pawn. And the company was all about production numbers. And they give you a forecast. You try to make the forecast. Or if you'd make the forecast, they'd increase it the next year. And it was all about the corporation. If you weren't willing to do whatever it took to get the numbers, they'll find somebody else. I mean, they would throw that out there. And I traveled all the time. And I was missing my kids' life. And I just decided after 10 years of doing that, my son was going on 4 years of age, and I said, I just can't do this anymore. And so at that point in time, I love to teach. It's something that I'm passionate about. Both my parents were teachers, but I didn't want to have the lifestyle of a teacher. I wanted to have my own lifestyle. And so I just reached out to the guy who was my investment broker and said, what's it like to be in the investment business? And of course, in the late 1990s, it was pretty easy. And so making that change was really scary, but it was really important because truly, if I had stayed in the corporate world, I probably wouldn't be married today.
There's certainly an immense amount of pressure that's put on you. That's one of the reasons that I decided I cannot continue on this track. Right. I want to be my own boss. I want to make my own rules. I don't want to miss those birthdays, those soccer games. Because to your point, there's just corporate America doesn't care. They just want to hit their numbers.
Right. So, right. You say you don't want to miss things. I missed my son's very first Christmas program at school. And I had to be at a meeting that was a 6-hour drive away. And it was devastating to me. So
actually, I want to dig in a little bit into that. Why was it so devastating to you? Is that because you had these really great fatherhood experiences? You really loved being with your father growing up? Or why was it so important to you?
Well, it was important to me because I said my family was everything. And my little boy, I'd walk in the house. I don't know if you've ever had a dog or you do have young children. When they see you, they just light up. It's unconditional love, right? And I was raised, my parents both loved me, but my dad left when I was 5. My brother moved away when I was 9 to be with my dad. And my dad was able to attend some of the events, but not all of them. And it was heartbreaking to me the times that he would say he was going to be there. And I would look to see if he was in the stands or in the bleachers, and he wasn't. And other times he was. But, you know, the desire for me as a young boy to have my dad there all the time was just an overriding, it just nagged at me. When you're a little kid, you don't know any different. And so I didn't want to do the same thing to my son and then eventually to my daughter.
You know what? I just got to say props to you, Patrick, for breaking that cycle. Not that your father was a bad person or anything necessarily wrong.
No.
But, you know, I think those moments matter 100%. And that's another reason why I love entrepreneurship. However, making that jump from employee to employer, from paycheck to payroll, that's a tough transition to make. What was that conversation like with your wife? And you're like, listen, I'm leaving corporate America. I'm going to start my own thing. Was she just like, whoa, hold the phone? What was that like?
It was really scary, right? Because we had just had our second child and I was just done. The corporate job was tearing me up. I was leaving on Mondays, getting home on Fridays. And I didn't have a lot of emotional energy for my family. And my wife was like, well, do you think you could find a job where you just worked here in town and you still got a paycheck? And it was really challenging from the standpoint that I had an expense account. They provided me with a brand new vehicle every 18 months. They serviced it. They paid for the fuel. It was a pretty good gig, but emotionally it was pretty tough. So my wife is pretty introverted. She's a veterinarian, never wanted to own her own veterinary clinic because she didn't want the responsibility of employees and payroll and getting people to pay their bills and whatnot. And so it was really scary for her. And I think there was a lot of trust. I told her I was going to do whatever it took to make sure that I was going to take care of my family. And as I started that, it was incredibly stressful. And when I started my business, I worked for a firm that I literally was knocking on doors, door to door to door, and just to get out and introduce myself. And I did it for 3 years, year round. And I live in the Pacific Northwest, so it was snow, it was hot. And I was physically ill every single morning before I would go out and do that. And my wife never said anything to me about it, but I think she saw that I was absolutely dedicated to making it work to a fault.
To a fault. Yeah, because I would think that if you're miserable, you're thinking like, what the heck have I done? This is the worst mistake. I'm going to go back to that drug, that paycheck. I always think of the paycheck as being a drug. How did you internalize that you knew that you were on the right track?
I just had faith in the process that if I continued to do what I was supposed to do every day, regardless of how much I didn't like it, that I was going to get there. And to me, I would say that I'd put the plow down and just start plowing. And I use a couple of analogies. I'm an analogies guy, and I love to fish. And if you have the expectation in your mind that every time you cast, that you're going to catch a fish, or you're going to catch a steelhead, or you're going to catch a salmon, every time you reel in and there isn't one there, if you have that expectation, you're greatly disappointed. And so I viewed as door knocking just another cast. And I would tell myself, just another cast, just another cast, just another cast. And eventually I got pretty good at it. And I found a client every day. I caught a steelhead every day. But man, I broke my line. I ratted up the reel. I caught rocks. All these things that I would joke with myself about. Oh, you just got a sucker, or, you know, that's not the right kind of fish. But I had to do that to keep myself going. And then one of the things I talk about in my book is your why. Why are you doing this? And Simon Sinek wrote a book called Start With Why. I think it's a great book. And my why was my family, to the point where I made a little picture book and I keep it next to my desk today. I'll show it here. I don't know if it'll even show on the camera. You're probably going to say I shouldn't do this, but this is my little picture book and it's a goals book, right? And inside of it, I had pictures of my family. And if I was not willing to knock on five doors that I literally talked to somebody. I just didn't knock on five doors and make a check mark. I had to talk to somebody, but if I wasn't willing to do that for my family, what was I doing? And then I'd flip the page and I had to do it five more times for my son and five more times for my daughter. And I did it every single day, 6 days a week. And people joked about the fact that I was a walking stockbroker, but it worked. Right. The point is it worked, but the hardest part was the stress was just unbelievable on me because I could not fail my family. Right. So you have to have that why and the grit, I guess, besides that to make it through.
Well, that practical advice of just having these reminders kind of set up, having these routines set up, that makes a lot of sense to me. The thing that I question myself on, Patrick, is I'm spending these late nights, weekends, working the project, working the vision, adjusting mm-hmm. accordingly, trying to avoid stepping on hooks from my fishing line, so on and so forth.
Right.
The thing that I often wonder is, and this is, I think, an easy trap for entrepreneurs to fall into, is you end up building your own prison. You leave one prison and then you end up setting up a job. It's not 40 hours. It's not 30 hours. It's 90 hours a week.
Right. Right.
You're an entrepreneur. How do you navigate that? How do you separate the two while also keeping them together?
Yeah. I say that I was my own worst boss because I demanded myself to work so much. And I think the thing that people need to do is hopefully you have some kind of a day planner, whether it's on your phone or it's the old Franklin planner or if it's just on a note sheet. I think if we're going to take the time to fill that out and have important meetings or important times on that, you need to also make an important time for your family. And the thing that is amazing to me, and I didn't realize this until way after I started, is each person only has a specific amount of emotional energy. At the end of the day, there's only so many emotional units of energy you have. It doesn't matter. You can't drink a Red Bull or another cup of coffee and get more energy units. And I think as an entrepreneur, you need to identify the fact that, okay, I need some emotional energy left when I get home for the people that I truly love and the people that I'm doing all of this for. Because if you don't have any emotional energy left, what do? You go park yourself on the couch or sit in your chair and you open your iPad, or your iPhone, or start watching television or get on the computer, and you're doing this mental dump because you don't have any energy left. And yet your family's there going, hey, wait, what about us? And so I think making that time, specifically making that time and having the conversation with your family that there are times that dad's got to work late. There are times when I'm going to be out of town. But if you make a commitment, number one, you're there, and then schedule it, right? So one of the things I do is, and my wife and I had a really difficult time about 15 years, almost got divorced. And for the last, I would say close to 10 years, we go on a date every week. And if you looked at my calendar right now, Thursday lunch, Brooke. And so we go to lunch every week, if at all possible. Now she's a veterinarian. There's days that she gets drug into having to do surgery, but we both know that it's a priority. And so if we can't do it on that Thursday, we're doing dinner Thursday night, or we're doing something on Friday, but we make it a special time. And when we do, I don't take my phone. I am not allowed, and that's me making that decision. I am not allowed to take my phone with me on that lunch date, on that dinner date, or on that movie date. I just don't. And we were out to our 32nd anniversary a week ago, and we went out to the movies, and I was surprised how many people were watching Top Gun Maverick and had their phones out. But then we went out to dinner. And nice restaurant. And there was a family, husband and wife and three kids, sitting at a table next to us. They did not have a conversation. They all had their face planted in that device.
Yeah.
And as an entrepreneur, we say we got into this so that we had more free time, we had more financial freedom. How many entrepreneurs do you see that their health is bad? They're not taking the time to go run, take care of themselves. The divorce rate in America is what, 50% of people that marriages end up in divorce. So if you look at the divorce rate within entrepreneurs, it's about 65%. It's terrible. But yet we say we're getting into being an entrepreneur so that we have more time. I just think it's critical that if that's truly that important, it needs to be on your calendar.
So yeah, and I kind of joke with my wife, like she'll say, hey, can we do this on this day? I'm like, if it's got to be in my calendar, because if it's not in the calendar, it's not happening, because we just get filled up all the time with technology.
Yeah.
Helps and
yeah,
it hurts to an extent. But yeah, Saturday night, that's date night. That's phones are away. We're going to be with each other. We try to avoid movies and videos and things like that. We try to be focused on each other. Mm-hmm. That's hard sometimes. Mm-hmm. That's hard sometimes.
Yeah.
But that I think is important. And I just want to point out the one thing that I think is pretty critical to making that transition to entrepreneur, if assuming you're married, is that communication, that dialogue is really important. I had a similar problem with my wife. She's like, I feel like you're not here. Every night you're in your office, you're working, you're doing this, you're doing that.
Right.
And I said, well, let's sit down and let's reverse engineer what we want.
Right. Right.
Where do you want to be in 5 years?
Right.
Do you want the house? Do you want this car? Do you want to go on the vacations? How do we get there?
Yeah. Yeah.
So when do you think that conversation should happen in your relationship?
Before you think it needs to happen, right? I think it needs to happen really early on. And we were the same way. I mean, walked by each other at night in the house and it was cold. Like I had a roommate and she's mad at me and I don't know why, because I'm working my tail off and I thought I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. You have to sit down and have that open communication. And the other part to that, Mark, is set a realistic expectation for your business, right? It's not I'm going to make the horizon this year. Set a number that is a number that you guys can live by, that you begin developing, that snowball begins to move forward with building the business. Instead of, I was talking to a young guy the other day, just having a brand new baby. And what he said was his goal this year was to make $300,000 no matter what. And I'm like, you've been living on like 35,000, 40,000. Well, maybe not quite that low, but that's your goal. You have to hit that no matter what. And well, what if you made 95? What if you made 100? And what if you made 300 in 3 or 4 years? And I don't think that we're taught to set some kind of a realistic expectation. I think that's between you and your spouse, right? Or you and your partner. You have to figure out, what do we need to get by? And then what do we want? Because everything we do, there's a cost to it. There's a cost. And that cost is time. That cost may be money. That cost might be just complete emotional energy. But there's a cost. And so I think if we can sit down and talk about, these are the things that we want to do this year. Understand that we're starting a new business, but this is going to be awesome down the road. How do we get there instead of saying, I just want it all right now?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think it's important to have dreams, to have aspirations, but
sure.
If you're 30-year-old married with kids, you're going to have a different circumstance than the 22-year-old single guy.
Absolutely.
Living in a flat, right? Like,
absolutely. And also that single guy living in a flat's probably not ever had much versus a family. I left corporate America. We had a decent house. I had a brand new car. We experienced driving new cars all the time. And then you're going to change and we might be able to afford one car. And so depending on your lifestyle or where you're at in life, if you're coming out of college and you're going to be an entrepreneur, you're used to eating Top Ramen. Right? My wife wasn't too excited when we go to Costco and buy a thing at Top Ramen, but it is what it is. And I think now looking back, it's like, wow, we went through a pretty tough time. I mean, I got my first paycheck. I'll never forget it. My first paycheck when I was working for this brokerage firm, it said there wasn't enough money to issue a check. Mm. And I said, I will never, ever have that happen again. And I never did, but you know, it's, I think having that expectation and you have to agree to it. You have to have that conversation with your partner because the second leading cause of divorce in America is finances.
Yeah.
And you're saying you're going to be an entrepreneur and you're doing this for the family, but look where we're at.
Yeah. Really good points. I definitely think life has seasons and understanding this is the season I'm in, communicating with your partner. This is the season that we're in. This is where we're trying to get to is something I think a lot about. I'm also curious. I want to talk about the book. I also, mm-hmm. before we get deeper into the book, I want to know what your thoughts are on like theming out your days. Do you have just like, because in entrepreneurship, calendar, scheduling, really important. Do you have particular days that you handle certain tasks? So for example, Monday might be your social media day, your content creation day. Tuesday might be client work. Do you theme out days or do you theme out hours throughout each day? How do you set up your schedule?
Well, right now it's a good question because the book is new, right? I never even thought I would write a book until a couple of years ago. I lost my dad. It'll be 3 years in October. And if you read the book, you'll understand some of that process. And I think part of the reason I wrote a book was closure. This has turned into far more than I ever expected it to. I originally wrote the book and I was very vulnerable in the book. My family is very vulnerable in the book. My wife read the first 3 chapters, put it down. She couldn't read anymore.
Wow.
And because I talked about what happened and why we almost got divorced, I talk about the fact that we were really hard on our son when he was 7th, 8th, 9th grade because of school. And we thought he was on drugs and we accused him of that. And fortunately, I wrote my son a letter and talking about all the things I appreciate about him after we found out he had a hearing deficit. And we didn't know anything about it. It's called auditory processing disorder. And he later told me that he didn't take his life because of that. So
I'm just curious, how would you have handled that moment differently? This is something I think about. My kids are 3 and 6. So I'm not worried about some of these bigger issues like drugs. Going back, do you think that you would have handled that confrontation differently? Because we, as parents, we have to tell our kids, listen, you might be on the wrong track. I need to have this conversation. You know, don't have sex. Don't smoke dope in the bathrooms. Do you think maybe you would have handled that situation a little bit differently? How would you maybe have handled it the second time around?
Well, I would have asked more questions because we were being told from the time he was in kindergarten, there was something the matter with his hearing. So we would take him, get his hearing tested in 90+ percentile. And they would say, there's nothing wrong with his hearing. Mm. Second grade, same thing. Fourth grade, same thing. They're always saying that there was something the matter with his hearing. We were taking him to these specialists going, everybody's saying there's something wrong with his hearing. Does he have ADD? Does he have whatever? And we even tried to medicate him on for ADD, and that was a disaster. I think there's too many kids on medication that shouldn't be. And finally, I was sitting down with a friend of mine who's a psychologist, and I said, I don't know what to do, right? I don't know if he's on drugs. We just don't know. And so he said, well, you need to take him to a specialty hearing clinic, a Holy Family Medicine specialty hearing clinic, see if he has auditory processing disorder. No one had ever mentioned auditory processing disorder. We didn't know what it even was. So we had to look it up. And so absolutely make an appointment, rush him up to Spokane. It was an hour and a half drive, and goes in. The first thing he comes out, 97 percentile. Well, hearing's fine. They said, now we're going to enter background noise. We're going to see what happens when we enter this background noise. And he dropped to the fourth percentile because his brain couldn't put together a sentence when there was all this other chatter and background noise behind him. So when he was sitting in a classroom, he was taking all these conversations, blending them together. He didn't know it, right? Blending them together, and he was getting the instructions completely wrong. And I was devastated. I sat and bawled about the fact that for all this time, we've been so hard on him. And so going back, what would I do different? I think on the second or third time, I would say to somebody, is there something that we need to be doing different than just a plain hearing test? And so I think exploring more before you become accusatory. And that's what I learned, accusing him of things that he wasn't doing. But the other part, to your point, and I wrote about this in my book, you have to be involved in your kid's life early on. You have to be involved doing what they like to do, having them involved in what you like to do, because by the time they get to be teenagers, and Mark, you're going to experience this, I'm sorry to tell you, when your daughter hits 12, 13, 14 years of age, you're going to come home one day and go, who are you? And where did my daughter go? And if you don't have, I swear to you, if you don't have a relationship established, not as just a friend, but I mean as a role model father, it's going to be really challenging. It's going to be really challenging. I mean, even with that, we had challenges. But so I would say, before you start accusing them of something, have those conversations, explore what's going on, and really be involved with trying to figure some of those things out. Because what they told me about auditory processing, 90% of the people with auditory processing are boys. And those boys typically are diagnosed ADD. And so here's 90% of the kids that are on medication probably have an auditory processing problem, and they're medicating something that the medication's not going to fix it. And so I think exploring, it's really what I would tell you.
So being a parent, so tough. And this is why I love the Awesome Dad Show, because we can learn from people that are a little bit ahead of us.
Yeah.
So moving back to the book, that's what the book is designed to do. Again, the book is
right.
The Family Business Balancing Act, An Entrepreneur's Guide to Being a Family Man. So as we discussed, you open up the book being super personal, just letting it all loose. What are we looking for in Act 2 and 3?
Oh boy, Act 2 and 3. I think the next step for me, Mark, is I love doing these podcasts. I've been invited to do some podcasts and some interviews, and that's blowing me away that people are that interested. And I've been starting to ask if I would speak. So I think Acts 2 and 3 is a deeper dive into the book, into the different sections of the book. And
yeah, give me more of that. I want to know more about the sections. Like, where are we moving from after we get through the first kind of part, open up about
my family? But I think you gotta go into why you do what you do. In Simon Sinek's book, I mentioned that, the start with why. That's a critical aspect. If you're gonna start a business, you have to have a why, because you're gonna face adversity, and the adversity is gonna knock you down. And if you don't have the grit and the why, you're not gonna get back up. And so I talk about that. I talk about, who'd you take a bullet for? And in today's world, that's kind of a tough statement, shock and awe, but I would take a bullet for my family. And if I would do that, then why am I not taking 30 minutes extra time to go do something with them? Or why am I not So that's a section in the book talking about that start with why, making an impact or taking the time, changing your life. You said this earlier, you didn't say it specifically, but designing your future. Don't live by default. And default means I'm just going to do the same thing every day and expect things to be different. I ask my team every week, we have a team meeting. In the beginning of the team meeting, I ask them to give a positive focus from the week before. Nothing about work, has to be about their lives. And I changed it up this week. And this is, I'm answering a question kind of about the book. But one of the things in that I asked is that this weekend is the end of July, right? Monday is the 1st of August. August is kind of the last month of summer school, and we get to Labor Day and school's going to start and all that. And if you get to the end of the month, what has to happen in the month of August for you to look back and say, man, that was a great month? And you have to design it, right? To your point, you have to design it. And so in the book, as you get later and later in the book, I talk about designing that life that you want. What does it look like? And I think it's really important to think about that versus just default. I'm going to have a better day in sales today than I did yesterday. This month is going to be a bigger month than it was last month. This year is going to be a bigger year. Time goes by too fast. And as your kids age, my kids are 23 and 26, as they age, time just goes faster and faster and faster. As an entrepreneur, people are going to see if you're successful. They're going to ask you to be on boards. They're going to ask you to volunteer for these things. And in the book, I talk about you have to sometimes dial it back. You want to be involved. You want to be in the community. You want to be out there. But all of that takes time away from your life by design. And so recently, unfortunately, I resigned from a board position with a local foundation. And I didn't do it because I didn't leave because I wasn't passionate about what they're doing. I got to the point where I wasn't doing great at everything I was doing. And so I have to dial it back. I mean, I love this message with the book. If somebody asked me why I wrote the book, I didn't realize how much money it cost to publish a book, but by the way, but I wrote the book so that if I can help a father build a relationship with their child that saves that child's life, literally, or I can help a father or a husband save their marriage, I want that to be my message. And I don't, will I ever recoup what it costs to publish the book? That's not why I did it. So I got kind of off track there. I'm like a little bit
but. You kind of your ending thought here kind of brings you full circle to getting clear on your why. Yeah. Because fatherhood is not sexy. It doesn't sell out stadiums. But, you know, I had Dr. Warren Farrell on the show, mm-hmm. I don't know, a year or two ago. And I truly believe we have a boy crisis in this country. Boys, girls to an extent, but really boys. I mean, they're totally lost. And I think that having people like you willing to put out this type of vibe, this type of book, these types of coaching and mentoring programs, it's really important, because if we don't step up as fathers, we're going to completely lose this next generation. They're just going to be completely lost. I mean, that was a big impetus for me to start the Awesome Dad Show, was we need to have these conversations. We need to highlight people like you that are putting out books like The Family Business Balancing Act. I want to acknowledge that why is probably going to have more of an impact on the world than a few extra $1,000 in your pocket each year. I think
absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know if you've heard of the Welcome to Fatherhood podcast. Kelly Jean-Philippe is a gentleman's name. And he was telling me that a statistic, he's an immigrant from Haiti, came here and he's successful, but he did not have a father in his life. And at the age of 12, I think he said it was at the age of 12, he met his father for 72 hours. And he was telling me that there are boys or kids being born without a father figure in their life. And yeah. He's African American. He's from Haiti. He was telling me that in that demographic, 74% of children are born without a father figure. Yeah. And I can't emphasize enough how important a father involved in a child's life is. It's just critically important.
Yeah. I mean, we could go really, I don't want to go too far off track, but
yeah, yeah.
Moms are amazing. Moms are awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I'm not a mom, right? I was raised by a great mom, a single mom. And I was talking with her about the book and she goes, well, you don't even mention that I was a great mom. And I said, Mom, it's about dads being better dads. It's not about a negative about my mom. So, but we have to be careful there. You're right. Because moms are critically important.
Mom's very important. Dad's very important. We can all be important, y'all. We can all get along. Yeah. We can all be important. And frankly, our kids need it. Because if you're not raising your, this is raising your kid. This little phone right here is raising your kid. And I'll tell you what, after 5 minutes of browsing Instagram, you're going to understand why you don't want that thing raising your kid. I'll tell you that much.
Right. Right.
So Patrick, again, I want to get to a rapid fire. I know we're running a little long on time here. The book is Family Business Balancing Act, An Entrepreneur's Guide to Being a Family Man. Pick it up, check it out. Link below. But Patrick, we got into a rapid fire. You ready, brother?
I'm ready.
All right. Buckle up, Buttercup. We are getting it rolling right here. Patrick, what's your favorite scary movie?
Ooh, The Shining.
Oof. Jack Nicholson. Great.
Was terrifying.
It still is. It still is. Favorite ritual to do with your kids?
Favorite family kid ritual. We love to go fishing together. That's maybe not a ritual, but we love to go fishing together. And I don't care if you catch fish this big or 25 pounds. We just love to go fishing and throw rocks and play in the water.
The simple things. Dig that.
Yeah.
If you could live anywhere in the world, where would you live?
Ooh, multiple places. I would live in the Pacific Northwest in the summertime. And then in the winter months, it's got to be sunny. And we're trying to figure that out. So right now we're looking at potentially the northern coast of the Sea of Cortez down in Mexico. So possibly there. But it's got to be sunny. I don't like gray and overcast. And so it's great here in the summertime. Wintertime, not so much. So two locations.
Yeah, I could dig that. It's a South Floridian. I like the blue sky.
Never been there. So we're going to come down to Marathon probably in the next 2 years.
Marathon is amazing. That's in the Keys. The Keys are awesome. There's nowhere like it, especially if you like to snorkel and fish. Fishing there is. So let's say you're on your plane ride coming down to the Florida Keys. Mm-hmm. If you could sit next to anyone in the world, who'd you want to sit next to?
Wow. I wish you'd have told me these things before you got for the podcast.
That's why you got to.
This you're might be first. Weird.
This is spontaneous, y'all. Yeah, this happens just in life.
This might be weird, but I think my daughter and my son sitting next to me. You could put some really famous person next to me or my son and my daughter, and I'd pick my son and my daughter because I don't have that much time with them anymore.
I like that answer. I like that answer a lot. And final question, if you had 10 seconds with yourself 10 years ago, what would you say?
I would say progress, not perfection. Because my dad was very hard on my brother and I. I don't know if anybody knows the basketball coach, Bobby Knight. That personality was my dad. And he was very driven. And if you didn't do it right, it was get on the ground and do 20 push-ups and run till you puke kind of thing. And yeah.
Fair enough. Well, I'm definitely about progress. Perfection paralysis, not digging it. So
perfection, so many people push for perfection. They try and be better than everybody else. And it causes a life of angst, right?
Yeah.
Dan Sullivan wrote a book called The Gap and the Gain. I'd really encourage people to read that book, but it talks about getting stuck in this gap of trying to reach perfection and you can't.
Well said. Patrick Cummings, thanks for joining the show and telling us a little bit about the fresh book, The Family Business Balancing Act. Patrick, thank you much, brother. Many, many years of success to you.
Mark, thanks. I really appreciate it. And it's been awesome to meet you.